The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hey, good afternoon to those of you who are on the East Coast, and good morning still to those on the West Coast. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. And this is our 11th show as we enter into our 15-week show program. This show and next week's show is going to be on kind of the hiring, selection, interviewing process component piece. And I'm going to kind of break with tradition of what I've done in the first 10 shows. And I'm going to go solo today. Rather than have a guest on today, I decided to take the time to really get into depth of, as it relates to the hiring process, the assessment component piece. Next week, I'll have guests on, and we'll talk about more about things that drive into having a strong selection process. But in essence, there's a belief on my part that the hiring component piece is, by many organizations, believe that they have a strong hiring program in place, but most of what I've seen in 20 years suggests that that may not be as true as what should be. But so I'm going to go into some depth of some things related to assessments today, and specifically the assessments we use and some comparisons. I'm going to kind of take off of on the one of the shows a couple weeks ago, actually 3 weeks ago, because the last 2 weeks we did were on leadership. But prior to the shows on leadership, we had my guest was Dr. Dave Watterson, who I'll refer to again today. But Dr. Watterson has been working around the world of assessments for over 40 years and has been my coach and mentor for nearly 18 of the 20 years that I've been in practice. But the fundamental piece from a strong hiring program says that you really need a strong screening process from the standpoint of what your job analysis and job descriptions look like, how you go about sourcing things, how you go about screening resumes and reading resumes, how you go about the phone screen process. So you really need a strong screening process. And the next thing you need is a very strong interview process that incorporates a behavioral-based interview approach as well as a competency-based interviewing approach, and at least, if nothing else, some kind of structured interview process that helps kind of put together somewhat of a grading system that's there, and we're going to touch on those things next week. The third component piece of a strong hiring program is a great assessment process or a great assessment program, which is going to be the focus of today's show. And then I think the fourth thing that's needed is a real strong reference checking component piece, or what I refer to as the process of validating references, which is a little different, unique approach than I've seen anybody else really in the marketplace get into. And we'll talk about that next week as well, as we get into checking references, or what I refer to as validating references. But so today's program is going to be on assessments, and primarily we're going to take off from my conversation with Dr. Watterson. I'd ask him to come on the show to kind of get into the depth of the different kinds of assessments, and to use his terms, there are a plethora of assessments on the market today, and so therefore it becomes very confusing on what's the best assessment to use. And so there's lots of philosophies on what's the best assessment to use. I'm going to kind of go into what we do with the executive group and what we've done for 20 years in terms of building our practice to kind of give a quick overview. 20 years ago when I started, I was really rudimentary in what we delivered to our clients, and that was the DISC and what's called an instrument called the Wunderlich, which I'll get into when we get into the cognitive side of the assessment. But what resonated with me was early on was, yes, I went through the DISC training, and it amazes me how most people who think they've been certified in DISC think they understand how to interpret it, because nothing could be further from the truth. Because it's a simple instrument, it has its complexities. But we're going to talk about the difference between a four-dimensional model, such as a DISC and some others that I'll mention. And we're going to talk about the differences as it relates to simpler versus more sophisticated instruments, and kind of give some examples of what those look like as we get into the assessment process and what we do and why we've been successful and have the kind of clients we have today. So as a means of understanding a simpler instrument versus a more sophisticated or more complex instrument, has to do with the fact that the majority of things on the market today, what I refer to as more of a commodity-based or simpler measures of assessments, would include things such as the DISC, the extended DISC, PI or predictive index, and if you looked at both of their materials, you'd wonder who plagiarized who. They're structured a little bit differently in the way their assessments are structured. Then there's the Berkman, the Caliper, obviously well-known as the Myers-Briggs, and then some maybe lesser knowns, but some things that are still out there is an instrument called the Pradco, Profiles International, Target International, Insights is another one that has a four-dimensional model. And then you've got your Chally, which is really more predicated towards sales, per se. But I refer to those as more basic instruments that looks at a four-dimensional component of behavior in terms of where you fit or fall in four quadrants. So if you're a DISC person, you're a high D or dominant, or high I or extroverted, or you're a high S or steady or compliant, or steady and consistent, or a high C, which is compliant. Your predictive index has an A, B, C, D factor. Their A correlates to the D of the DISC. Their B correlates to the I of the DISC. Their C correlates to the S of the DISC, and their D correlates to the C of the DISC. So, again, it's still a four-dimensional model. The Berkman uses a four-dimensional model. It's color-coded. You fall into different colors of quadrants, but they have the same impact in terms of their meaning or interpretation. And then you've got a lot of other knockoffs that are out there that people, that I've come across that are even not going to take time to mention, but those are the four-dimensional models that most people are familiar with. And the value behind those are they're simple to administer, they're simple to interpret. You don't need a lot of training. You don't need a lot of sophistication. None of those really take much more than 10 minutes, if that, to take. So it's a quick, easy, what I refer to as simple, down and dirty approach. And I did use the DISC early on in my career. And when a client asked me to then help him evaluate a general manager position to groom as potential president or to take over the company, to run the company, I realized that the DISC was not nearly in depth of what I needed to deliver to that client to allow him the depth of what I felt was necessary to evaluate someone at that level. And so this particular client asked me to go research firms that might then offer that offering, if you will. And I researched five firms in Chicago, and selected a firm called OP, which is no longer in existence, but OP was a group of psychologists that I selected out of the five firms in Chicago to look at, and my firm has been modeled after that research. But I looked at those five firms and selected on a firm, and as I evaluated what they were doing and began to study what they did and what they offered, they were using as a test battery for levels like that, and that battery included the 16PF, which we're going to talk about today, included the OPQ, a Thurstone test of mental alertness, which we use also, which is kind of like a Wunderlich on steroids for those of you who aren't familiar with it, but we'll get into that also when we get into the cognitive part on the show. But the depth of background that was prevalent in that organization's ability to really evaluate deeper behaviors than beyond what the DISC provided woke my eyes up to saying there's a whole new world out there that I need to explore. And so I began on a very strong trek to find a way to obtain more sophisticated instruments. And I even looked at the predictive index as a way to say maybe predictive index was a better tool to use than the disc. But the more research I looked into, they're really pretty much mirrored instruments in many, many ways. And both have a very strong presence in the marketplace. And for obvious reasons, they're easy to interpret. They go to market a little bit differently, but nonetheless, the level of sophistication necessary beyond a four-dimensional model then says, what other instruments that are out there make a difference? And when you look at the world of psychological assessments that go beyond the four-dimensional model and get into deeper elements of behavior, you find instruments like the 16PF and the Hogan, the CPI, which is the California Personality Inventory, the NEO, the OPQ, the FIRO-B, the Strong Interest, to name a few. And those instruments are much more in-depth, they are broader, they are deeper in their ability to interpret behavior and deep-seated behavior beyond what a four-dimensional model could provide. So as an example, when you look at a four-dimensional model and you compare it to the 16PF, the 16PF stands for 16 personality factors. And therefore, in those 16 personality factors, there are five broad global factors, which would mirror your four-dimensional model, but adding a fifth. But the difference is the 16F breaks it down into much more of a finite ability to interpret strong behavior. And as I did the research and as I chose that firm in Chicago to support my candidate's ability to hire this person, and I began to study the OPQ and the 16PF, and then I looked at other instruments in the market, I became extremely fascinated with the 16PF and the depth of what the 16PF provided. And as I began to research other assessments, which I had done for a number of years, the 16PF was such a strong instrument, I actually hired a gentleman from Valparaiso University called Dr. Ray O'Connor that came on board and came on staff and helped me bring on the 16PF as part of the practice. A year or so later, we did a study with Valparaiso University in the psychology department to validate our predictive ability based on the 16PF to predict selection around both sales and management, and since that time we've developed a full-blown battery that centers around that. But the 16PF is certainly the instrument of choice for us. We could have used, if we were going to look at something else, the NEO is a very strong comparable tool. The CPI is a strong tool. The Hogan is another one, and we do use the Hogan in our battery. We don't use it as a primary selection tool because I think the 16PF is much more powerful, but also because I've been using it for almost 18 years, and I understand the interpretive power of the instrument besides the computer-generated reports that you might get. And so going back to the disc, we still use the disc in our battery, and we still use the disc in some of our team-building activities and exercises. The disc is a nice, simple way to present very unobtrusive, easy language to understand that's non-threatening. And what you'll find is that in most of those assessments out there that are more simpler, easier to administer, by the way, when you get into more advanced assessments like the 16PF or the Hogan, they're usually 185 to anywhere to 285 questions on average. Dr. Watterson developed the WPI, which is a Watterson Personality Inventory. That's 285 questions, but also adds some additional value to it in its interpretive ability because it looks at an expatriate scale that we use in international assignments. So as I come back from the break, I'm going to take a little bit longer, or not longer, I'm going to take a little bit more in-depth into the 16PF and its value and why we chose it based on so many instruments that are out there. And obviously being an independent, have that ability much like an independent insurance agent does to select what is the best instrument for the right application for that client. So I may use a mixture or a battery of different, assessments, but still the 16PF is the mainstay, as this show will tend to reveal more about and why we do what we do. So I'll see you back after the break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Grow Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to the show. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. It's a show that is an outcome of a book that I'm writing right now and hopefully we'll have ready to publish here in December. The book is also called What's Leadership Got to Do with It. And the book is an outgrowth of 20 years of consulting and 20 years of prior business experience, 10 of those being in business for myself, 10 in corporate America, also in an international role, and the last 20 years of consulting. And the book is an outcome of what I've seen and witnessed in the last 20 years of working with organizations in their business development, in their growth, and in terms of mergers, acquisitions, turnarounds, and things of that nature. But it's based on five fundamental concepts. Chapter one is about organizational culture, which is if you follow the show or go to our website and you are interested in any of these component pieces. Chapter one is about corporate culture, and chapter two is about individual contributors. Chapter 3 is about group dynamics, and Chapter 4 is about business dynamics, and Chapter 5 is about the structure of your business. And so it's my premise that leadership must pay attention to all five elements of a business, kind of like, the cylinders on a car. If you're not, operating with all horsepower, you're going to lose speed. So the show is an outcome of that, and each show is designed to take a little bit in-depth look at different elements that have been presented in the book and the outline. And as I mentioned, today's show is on specifically assessments as it relates to the hiring process. We incorporated the show on making sense of testing, where we talked about assessments to be able to use from a coaching standpoint, and we're going to have a show on coaching. We talked about assessments from a development or leadership standpoint, which we blended into the last two shows on leadership and how we use that in the executive realm, in the executive work that we do. But there's a reluctance from some organizations to use assessments in the pre-employment arena. Less of a fear using it in the development side. That also creates some complications there, because sometimes organizations use different assessments in different situations, which really winds up confusing the organization on what language to use. And that's the beauty of the 16PF. It is so adaptable, not only from a selection standpoint, from a development standpoint, a coaching standpoint, a internal hiring standpoint, from a coaching succession planning standpoint. It just really has multiple uses, whether it's management, sales, whatever, which we'll get into. But there's a reluctance by organizations to use assessments and say, well, what assessment should I use? And just about any assessment. I say that with a little bit of grain of salt because the DISC is not validated as a selection tool. The Myers-Briggs is not validated as a selection tool. The others really try to position themselves as a selection tool. But in a four-dimensional world, it becomes very limiting for you to really have the predictive power that you need in some of the more senior roles or even more sophisticated roles or in international assignments. It almost becomes impossible to use, from my perspective, a four-dimensional model. If that were the case, I'd still be using the DISC today. Or I would have chosen to join forces with the firm that had the PI as I look for a distributorship for the PI or predictive index. And my wife's firm uses that. But again, I just, from what I began to study and learn, it just didn't provide what I felt was necessary to deliver to my clients and the kind of work that we do today. But where I'm headed with that is there's a reluctance from organizations to utilize assessments in a pre-employment setting, primarily for fear of litigation. And the fallacy is, and the misnomer is that it's not the assessment that winds up getting people in trouble as it relates to EEOC or affirmative action or disparate impact. It's not the assessment 9 times out of 10. It's the lack of a process or the lack of a followed process or the lack of procedures that are uniformly applied throughout the organization that winds up getting the organization in trouble for litigation more so than the assessment itself. And any assessment will pretty much hold up in court to a degree. But nonetheless, it's the process or the system by not following it. So in other words, if I've got a white male and a black male and a female, a black female and a Hispanic female, and that's kind of the mix of people that applied for a role, and I choose not to use the assessment process on the black gentleman, and he doesn't get hired, he might discriminate against not being having the same fair aspect of going through the assessment process. So by not choosing not to give him the assessment when I gave everybody else did, or in any combination thereof, your lack of a consistent process or following protocol in your organization is what really winds up getting you in trouble, not the instrument itself. From that standpoint, then, if you've got a strong process or program, and if you don't, we can help you design one. But if that's the case, then what assessment are you going to use? Well, in some entry-level kinds of positions, maybe a four-dimensional model is acceptable. But as you get higher in the process of different roles, you start to look for other data points of information to help you have a little bit stronger ability to from a predictive standpoint. So when I went back and began to study all the assessments on the market and I selected the 16PF, what I came to find was that Dr. Ray Cattell, Raymond Cattell, who developed the 16PF in the late 40s, was one of the few founders of, and of course, this was called the Big Five theory today in psychology, which is an outcome of Dr. Cattell's work. And if you go look at all the other instruments on the market, especially the ones that are psychologically based, you will find that they all try to validate themselves against the 16PF. And there's different types of validity that are looked at. But they all try to benchmark themselves against the 16PF because it really is considered the grandfather of all assessments. And it enables us to work internationally because of its broad range of reach. But the piece is that Dr. Cattell studied human nature and was able to use a mathematical process called factor analysis to come up with 16 dimensions that are able to differentiate one person from another. Now compare that to the four-dimensional model of a DISC or a PI or a Myers-Briggs or a Berkman or the others on the market. Compare being able to look at four dimensions of behavior versus 16 dimensions of behavior, and it's obvious that a more sophisticated instrument allows you a deeper, better ability to drive deep-seated understanding of behavior. And so Dr. Cattell was able to really get in to drive at descriptive narratives of how humans react. And it's that ability and that richness that an in-depth assessment provides. And like I said, if I didn't have the 16PF, I'd use the CPI or the NEO or the Hogan, and we do use the Hogan as well as an adjunct instrument as well, because it is a very strong instrument. But while the disc measures or PI or Myers-Briggs are those four-dimensional models, the 16PF has five broad factors, and those five broad factors are broken down into sub-factors. And those sub-factors then is what really allows you to get the richness and the depth and the breadth of behavior that the others can't. And in this second segment, or in the third segment of the show, I'm going to get into kind of driving that to a deeper realization of what I mean by that. But the advantage I've had of using the 16PF over the last 18 years is also having had the tutelage of Dr. Michael Carson, who was the leading clinical psychologist in the world of utilization of 16PF in clinical application, and has written several books on 16PF in clinical practice and practical application, and Dr. Watterson's work over 40 years of using the 16PF, and was the lead IO psychologist that taught psychologists how to use the 16PF, and I'm having gone through his three advanced programs, have really had a great appreciation for these two gentlemen and what they've taught me. But the other thing that if you're wondering about using an instrument and whether or not you really want to use it and whether or not it's really valuable, there's a book called The 12th Mental Measurements Yearbook. It's put up by the Burroughs Institute of Mental Measurements out of the University of Nebraska. And I had the privilege of calling them and spending some time, and I talked to the managing editor because I was doing research on all the other instruments that are out there. And I'm not going to name names, but this is a research institute that goes out and then evaluates competitive assessments on the market, and then every year produces journals around the validity or the value of those assessments. And of the assessments I've mentioned so far, there are two of them that Burroughs has asked for their information to evaluate them by an independent regulatory agency. And it's interestingly enough, and I won't name names, but neither one of these two organizations are willing to divulge any of their information to Burroughs for public audit, if you will. And I find that very interesting that two very well-known instruments that are trying to position themselves in the marketplace today that are highly advertised and highly touted don't want any research material given to this Burroughs yearbook. I find it interesting. I might tell you on the QT, but I won't publicize that on this show. But nonetheless, the getting back to the 16PF and its value, it allows you then to go deeper into behaviors and to personality, which we're going to cover in this next segment. So why is the 16PF such a great instrument, and how can you use that instrument to really help look at different job segments in terms of different hiring aspects? How can you use that to tie into how you blend it into how you're going to interview that person and what you come away with from the interview and the richness of what's there in their personality? And how can you use that to further help check references as you look at that? And we'll spend some more time with batteries and things of that nature as we wrap up the latter half of the show. So we're going to break. Again, you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. You can check us out on the web at www.theeg.com, where you can find all the previous shows are housed on our site, or send me an email at rick@theeg.com, and be glad to answer any questions. If you're listening and you have a call in, call 866-472-5790, and I'll see you after the break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. You can check us out on the web at www.theeg.com, that's T-H-E-E-G.com, and take a look at some of the product offerings and services and things that we offer our clients. But we're back to talk about assessments as a general rule, and as I mentioned, we still use the DISC, so I don't want to come across as though it's a bad instrument. Neither do I want to come across as the Myers-Briggs is a bad instrument, or PI is a bad instrument, or even the Berkman or any of those. They're not bad instruments. They're just not very sophisticated instruments, from my personal opinion, and the research that I've done. But as we look at the 16PF, you know, it is without a doubt well known that behavior is the single biggest predictor of performance and not competencies, because the competencies necessary for most people to utilize as they move through various levels of their organization in terms of roles and responsibilities, competencies are basically driven by the behavior. And because behavior is the biggest predictor of success, you need an assessment that with it comes a level of sophistication that gives you the breadth and depth of measurement to get at the depth of information you need to make a strong hiring decision. So when you're looking at international assignments, or you're looking at plant manager assignments, or you're looking at vice president assignments, or you're looking at people that you want to put into a, you look at people that are going to be put into senior roles for turnarounds, and you're trying to find if that person has the right behavior. You know, imagine trying to get Ted Kaczynski, who was the Unabomber, to be an MC on a weekly talk show. Imagine getting Joan Rivers to man a lighthouse in the Pacific Northwest. Those personality traits just don't fit in those job roles. And so when you start looking at depth of behavior, the 16PF moves into giving that depth of behavior because of its in-depth assessment of behavior. So it's able to look at elements of emotional resilience, or what we call workplace coping skills. It's able to look at the depth of a person's aggressiveness. That aggressiveness can turn into anger. Again, that is only potentially able to be predicted per se in more sophisticated instruments. So one of the things that the 16PF has in and of itself that I've never seen any other assessment have, maybe out there, but I haven't seen it yet, is the 16PF is able to pinpoint 15 potential negative elements of behavior. And when you look at some of the reports that emerge from other instruments, there's a very, what I would call a softness or a vagueness about what it is they're trying to tell you. And sometimes it's even hard to decipher if this person's a good fit because the language isn't succinct enough. And so in the development of the reports that I've created in conjunction with Dr. Carson, that I've created for sales selection, for customer service selection, technicians, managers, and then general reports, I've made sure that the language is hard-hitting enough to allow the reader to determine whether or not this is a person that they really want to spend the time with. Those reports for selection are not designed for applicant feedback and never recommended for the applicant to see, even if you were to choose them. I have created what's called an onboarding report that once you do hire them, it's a different kind of report to help them and the hiring manager talk about where their strengths and weaknesses lie as it relates to them coming into their new role. In that onboarding report, and the language is softer, but it's more directed toward the coaching and development side that once I bring them on board, now what do I do with them? And so there's a degree of difficulty in that most assessments on the market don't really have, and ours has, a selection, an onboarding, and a development. All three different reports are available to help utilize that. But in that 16PF, there are in essence 32 dimensions of behavior because you have the opposite of each of the behaviors. So a highly dominant person on one side is more submissive on the other, still a behavior. So there's two behaviors per trait. And just like the DISC or predictive index or Myers-Briggs, where there's four dimensions, there's really eight elements of behavior because you have the highs and lows of each behavior. So with the 16PF, you wind up getting 32 identifiable dimensions of behavior because you're looking at the extreme spectrum of those behaviors, hence the value and the depth of that instrument. But one of the things that the 16PF will do that the others don't, from the four-dimensional standpoint, is it breaks down the behaviors into deeper understanding of behaviors. So in other words, when you look at extroversion on the Myers-Briggs or on the DISC, which is factor I, or the PI, which is factor B, and you look at extroversion and you look at and try to understand the depth of what it is evolving in that person's social orientation to extroversion, the 16PF will break that extroversion down into five different subcomponents of extroversion. It looks at how that behavior is actually modeled. And that's the interpretive value, so that when you start looking at people in customer service roles or in different types of sales roles, whether it's transactional sales roles or more strategic account selling, and you start to look at the relationships of extroversion, you can pinpoint a salesperson's or a customer service person's or even a manager's ability to understand how that extroversion is wired and have a better idea of how that then plays itself out or manifests itself within a different job function. And so when you look at behavior, you can take a look at then by job class, which we've done hundreds of times. One of our clients is a railroad car manufacturer, and we looked at personality traits and reasoning traits based on shop floor supervisors in two of their major plants. And we're able to pinpoint and identify specific behaviors and specific reasoning skills that were critical that differentiated high performers from low performers. We also looked at or able to differentiate for a client in people working on a shop floor in an automotive plant, where our process helped cut that turnover from 14% to 6%, but helped specifically identify through a hiring process and some of the things we did from a hiring process and the selection tool utilizing the 16PF, identifying specific traits between high performers and low performers so we could begin to select to a model of performance. We've done that with a number of different sales forces. One of our sales forces has three different job classes where there's a sales rep, an account rep, and a territory rep, and each of them have different functions, kind of the hunter-farmer component piece. The 16PF, because we know there's eight core fundamentals of behavior of the 16 behaviors, we know there's eight predominant traits that are necessary for every salesperson. It's an absolute, and I don't care what the sales role is. Now, when you get into different types of selling environments versus technical versus non-technical or conceptual versus transactional, there are different behaviors beyond those eight that we look for, but we're able to put up a pretty strong identifiable profile, if you will, of what a successful person looks like. So whether you're selling caskets or whether you're selling food service or whether you're selling trash services, which we have clients in all of those industries, you're still looking for a set of core behaviors that drive a salesperson's success. And we can predict success based on what we know the behavioral profile looks like. The same thing we've done for operations management. We can identify the behaviors necessary that differentiate strong operational managers from weak operational managers. Or roles in leadership, as we've done for other clients, and we spoke to that on the last two shows. And the 11 traits that are really critical for high-performing, outgoing leaders, what 11 traits of the 16 would we want to see, or at least maybe even develop if they don't possess, develop those traits in going forward. So as we look at then trying to identify the jobs we're looking to hire, whether it's a technician or a service manager, whether that technician has a confined place, whether the technician works out of their home, as various clients we have, we're able to look at the broad range of jobs that are there and look at the behaviors that are there and match up the behavior to the job and the outcome and be able to predict with a high degree of probability the outcome of success in using our tool in a selection process. As you kind of move up the job class and you move beyond perhaps, so for an example, if we're going to, one of our clients uses the 16PF, but we also use a Bennett mechanical and an electrical test to look at the competencies necessary on the technician side. So we may mix and match different assessments, but as we get into more sophisticated roles, we then begin to use a more sophisticated battery, and that's where we'll incorporate the 16PF, and we'll use the Hogan. We use the Thurston Test of Mental Alertness, which is a cognitive reasoning test, which we'll talk more about in this last segment. We'll use the Watson-Glaser, which measures inductive and deductive reasoning, and we'll use an IQ test to help us look at the depth of behavior in more senior roles that allows us the ability to have more data points and more information to make a much stronger hiring decision. So when you're after a plant manager or a VP of operations or international operations manager, do they have those skill sets? And that's where a battery of assessments and a more sophisticated kind of assessment gives you that ability to have deeper information. So we're getting ready to take another break. Again, you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? My name is Rick Thiemann, and I'm the president of the executive group. And you can check us out at the web at www.theeg.com. And we'll look forward back to you at after the break.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. Do you have a question or comment about today's program? Please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to the fourth and final segment of today's show on assessments and understanding assessments as it relates to the selection process. When you look at working with a vendor, whether it's myself or someone else, it's beyond the ability to just sell you a test, or an assessment that generates a set of responses from, it's the ability to interpret, and the more sophisticated battery that you use, the tougher the interpretation gets. But the at NearGas, I've done somewhere close to 8,000 assessments in almost 20 years of doing this, and as I look at the value that is gleaned from a battery and even the depth of the 16PF, one of the things the 16PF measures is emotional resilience, which the preponderance of the others do not. And emotional resilience, much like other dimensions of the global factors of the 16PF, which we label them as performance factors because they relate to performance, and that's how they show up on our assessments as you get the assessment reports back. But the complexity of behavior and the depth of behavior as you look at the 16PF, the emotional resilience piece, helps you see if a person has that emotional wherewithal, that emotional resolve, whether if they possess the cool, calm, collected style, or are they highly volatile, or they are highly angry, or are they highly antagonistic? Will they become ugly? Can they get ugly? Do they maintain their composure? Do they get overly anxious about making decisions and therefore have a hard time making decisions? And it's kind of like the sky is falling, kind of the Chicken Little syndrome. The sky is falling. Or are they so serious that they just can't really garner the enthusiasm around leadership that's necessary? There's just so many things that as you look at the ability to manage stress, bounce back from adversity, deal with the challenges, especially challenges in higher level roles, the emotional resilience piece is such a huge, huge element, which is also why we will incorporate the Hogan at times, because it looks at derailers and has a supporting mechanism to the 16PF. But when you look at the battery of assessments, we're looking for as much information as possible to help us understand how people will tend to project themselves into the world or into their role. And by using that battery, we are able to garner perhaps a more in-depth, informed piece, because we're measuring different things, and we can measure the style as well as ability of an individual, be it sales, leadership, whatever, and the amount of time it takes in that information. So in your simpler models, which take maybe 10 minutes to take, when you look at the 16PF, which takes about 35 minutes online, the Hogan's about 40 minutes, and you look at then incorporating a battery of assessments like we might use that measures a number of things when we look at a test battery, might include 3, 4, 5, even as much as 6 different assessments that in some situations on senior roles, in senior assignments, might take as much as 2.5 hours or even 3 based on how quickly a person gets through them. On average, 1.5 to 2 hours is kind of our standard battery. So we have kind of an entry-level assessment, which is a 16PF, and then we have a managerial battery, and then we have a sales battery, and we have an executive battery that looks at different elements of that makeup as we apply people in those roles, and the interpretive power back to the organization for job fit. So we will incorporate then that ability to look at deep-seated behavior, but we also then add to that in the battery, we add to that a number of reasoning tests, because we want to understand how that executive or that salesperson or that manager, what's their thinking style? Are they more of a hands-on learner and hands-on in their thinking? Are they a conceptual learner? How quick are they? What's their level of natural intelligence? Are they street smart? Are they book smart? How well-read are they? How articulate are they? How strong is their problem-solving ability? So we will use an IQ test, which is in essence a spatial relationships test that measures innate intelligence that gives us kind of understanding of horsepower. And we will use a critical thinking skills called a Watson-Glaser, which measures inductive and deductive reasoning. And we will use a Thurstone test of mental alertness, which is kind of a Wunderlich on steroids. The Wunderlich is 50 questions, it's 12 minutes, it's timed, and gives you a single rating score. The Thurstone is 126 questions, and you have 20 minutes to take it, and you have two math and two verbal, and it gets progressively more difficult as it goes. The 16PF has a measure of problem solving built into it that other instruments typically do not. But we still augment that piece with a broader range of understanding of a person's thinking style or thinking skills that's incorporated into 16PF that comes out in what's referred to as Factor B. And we know that there are certain scores that are cutoff scores based on that that tell us whether or not that person has the reasoning ability to succeed in those levels. So we know that in one of our clients we work with in terms of looking at managers for their plants, we found that people who scored less than 110 on IQ and who scored less than the 65th percentile on their Thurstone scores and who scored less than in the 70th percentile on the Watson-Glaser, those people tended to struggle in high-level plant manager roles because they really had trouble with the mental wherewithal, if you will, or mental bandwidth to be able to manage such a complex environment beyond just personality. So when you look at critical thinking skills and you look at behavior and you look at the ability to manage behavior and manage stress, you can begin to determine if you might have an executive that might have trouble and where there may be an intervention. One of our clients we worked with, an individual we were brought in, was managing their South America plant, which is where 60% of this particular automotive client's revenue stream came from. This plant manager oversaw two plants and was struggling. And through a series of poor mistakes over about a 12-month period, it cost the organization about $1 million in lost productivity and profits. And we were called in on the intervention, and unfortunately, this was an executive that wasn't salvageable in terms of they were just in over their head. And so assessments in terms of internal promotions or bringing some from in, when you look at the cost of bringing in new people, especially in senior-level roles, that particular role's salary was $250,000 a year salary. But when you look at senior-level roles and you weigh the cost of utilizing an assessment to measure whether or not, beyond just what the resume and interview tells you, to confirm whether or not what you think you see is what you're actually going to get, and the value of those assessments, be it has its predictive nature for whether it's international assignments, plant manager assignments, sophisticated sales rules, they help you then understand how you can look at using an assessment to help you gauge the success and the outcome and the potential performance, then what's the value that you can put on that. So as the 16PF then breaks down those behaviors and we look at those batteries, the show that we did on making sense of testing was really designed to help our listeners really understand what's out there. And today I've kind of gone into more in depth of what's in that realm. But the battery of assessments that are used, the depth of what comes out in the 16PF and the areas of potential concern that emerge then helps to see if now we have any potential derailers. And so when you look at the Peter principle or you look at promoting people to a new level or you're looking to see if people can get to the level or the next level, and when you tie in hiring and succession planning and you tie into talent management, you need to have a robust enough process which incorporates the assessment component piece that as you bring people into your organization, now how do you make sure that you quantify what it is you think you're hiring? So having that strong assessment process allows you the ability to pull things together, evaluate your people, start to identify the talent in your organization, identify where the talent gaps are, and begin to right-size your organization. And the old adage of putting your people in the right place or putting the people, or what's the old adage, or Jim Collins, right people on the bus in the right seats is kind of the premise. And utilizing assessments can help you look at then the realm of those. We've done a number of validation studies that are prevalent from operations to sales to financial services. It looks at job fit, employee turnover that's there, are all things that can be utilized in having a much more strong assessment process. So I thank you for attending the show. Again, you've been listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. You can check us out at the web at www.theeg.com or send me an email to rick@theeg.com, and we can help you design strong assessment process to fit your assessment needs. Next week's show, we're going to talk more about the structure of a hiring process and getting to some things that are critical to allow you to take the assessment part, mirror that into a strong hiring program and a strong hiring process, and blend that together to have a stronger talent management process and a stronger talent acquisition process. So have a great week. We look forward to having you back next week.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.